Today on Straight Talk Africa, a look at the upcoming elections in Malawi. Critics say the poll is too close to call. That discussion is coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali, and today we are discussing the upcoming elections in Malawi. Voters in Malawi head to the polls on May 21st. Political observers are predicting a tight battle for the presidency between incumbent Peter Mutharika and several top opposition candidates. My colleague Paul Ndiho examines the race.
Campaigning in Malawi's upcoming election is entering its final stages as voters prepare to elect a president, members of parliament and local councillors. President Peter Mutharika of the Democratic Progressive Party has told thousands of his supporters that he will continue to act on his election promises, convincing his backers that he will emerge from this poll the winner in a landslide. But allegations of corruption continue to hover over his campaign. The government denies the accusations, and Mutharika's supporters appear to be unmoved by the corruption claims.
I just want him to continue from where he has started, because he has been building a lot of constructions in terms of encouraging people, in terms of education, in terms of some of the people with careers. Yeah, so I'm expecting much from him.
We are somehow ready. We have seen those people campaigning, and we are ready to vote this coming elections.
One of President Mutharika's top rivals in this election is Lazarus Chakwera of the Malawi Congress Party. Chakwera claims Mutharika is failing Malawian citizens. More than 50% of the country's 18 million people are living below the poverty line. Unemployment is rampant, life expectancy is low, and the infant mortality rate is high. An estimated 1 million Malawians are living with HIV, and over 770,000 children are orphaned, many due to AIDS, according to the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID.
I can't go again to vote for DPP, but for now, I'm going to vote for Lazarus Chakwera because his manifesto is for good for me.
If MEC is serious to produce good results that people will indeed vote for this year, we expect to see a change.
Vice President Saula Sachilema is hoping to win power as head of a new opposition party, the United Transformation Movement. Political analysts say Chilema is seen as the biggest threat to both Mutharika and Chakwera. Chilema has a large following of young people who want change from the current administration.
All Malawians, three quarters of them, they want change. 60% of the people who are going to vote are the youths. Now, most of the youths want Dr. Chilema. Therefore, this shows that Dr. Chilema will be our president on 29 May 2019.
Many Malawians remain undecided for whom to vote as president. Zainabu Mangani is one of them.
I can't say I'm ready because I don't even know which president to vote for, because these presidents are all the same. If I give the vote to this person, I don't know if this world will change. Malawi will remain the same because they are a bunch of ish. What can I say? They're all the same. What they know is to feed their stomach. They are not concerned of our welfare.
Voter turnout may be the key to winning the presidential poll, and the real impact of this election will only be known once the ballots are counted. Paul Ndiho, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Joining us here in the studio are two distinguished guests, Janet Zinati Kalim, a former diplomat with the Malawi Permanent Mission to the United Nations, and Limbani Kamanga, Program Manager for the Grassroots Project. And last but not least, Sangwani Mwafulirwa is the Director, Media and Public Relations at the Malawi Electoral Commission. He joins us live via Skype from the Malawian capital of Lilongwe. Well, I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Yeah. Let me go to Sangwani in Lilongwe. Good evening, Sangwani.
Good evening, Shaka.
How are you?
I'm doing great, and you?
I am hugely terrific. Thank you very much for asking. Now, talk to us about the capability of the readiness, in fact, of your institution, the Malawian Electoral Commission. To what extent is it ready to deliver a free, fair, transparent, verifiable, and credible election next week?
Thank you, Shaga. I think we are more than ready and we are more than capable. And I can say we are on a track to hold a credible election this coming Tuesday. Because when you are looking at the capability of an EMB to deliver an election, you don't just look at what happens on the polling day, but you look at it as a process. So from where we are coming from as Malawi Electoral Commission, this year we migrated from the optical-based market recognition system to the biometric voter registration system. It's one of the biggest projects and one of the successes for the commission, because if you are looking at a credible election, you have to look at those people who are eligible to vote. Have they been given an opportunity to register as voters? This we did as Malawi Electoral Commission, and all the stakeholders recommended us for that. Then you have to go into the issue of nomination and candidates. All the people that were eligible, nobody was hindered, nobody was disenfranchised. We received their nominations. We analyzed if there's anybody who was stopped from the process. It's on the basis of legal shortfalls, not that there was any political interference. And then we have been in the campaign period, which has run smoothly, and we've got just a few days to go. We go to polling. That aside, the logistical side, we think we have done our best. By this time we are talking, we have sent to the castles all the non-sensitive polling materials. And tomorrow morning, we are starting sending out the ballot papers to all the councils. We are quite sure, and we are on schedule, that come 17th, come 18th, all the polling stations will have all their ballot papers ready, more than 48 hours to polling.
Now, I gather that there are 6 million Malawian voters, registered voters, this time around. Any particular reason why it seems to me that Malawians are politically apathetic? I ask that question because the last time I checked, the last election, you are talking about 7 million Malawian registered voters.
Thank you, Shaka, for that. There is a big explanation to that. If you look into the statistics of 2014, we didn't have the national ID, and we had about 7.5 million people registering. But if you look at the turnout was around 70%, which meant that 30% of the people that registered last time didn't show up for voting. Now, why did they not show up for voting? You find that during that time, the voter ID, the voter certificate that we're giving as Malawi Electoral Commission was doing a lot of functionalities, like being used for accessing social services, whether it's at the bankers and identification, receiving fertilizer subsidies, and even anywhere you would want an ID. Now that coming 2019, our voter registration was preceded by the National Identification Registration System, which registered all Malawians. Now, those who were registering, this is what we think, and we strongly believe that those who were registering just to get the voter certificate didn't find any reason to go and register, because they didn't see any reason, because they are not interested in voting. But that aside, we as Malawi Electoral Commission followed what was in the law. We are supposed to open voter registration centers for 14 days uninterrupted. And this we are bad to eat. And the people that were going for registration really commended us because our system was so fast and efficient. There were no queues. Unlike in the past, though we registered 7.5 million, but we would always have long queues during the time of registration. So that could be the explanation. Now, we would not necessarily refer that was voter apathy. On our side as Malawi Electoral Commission, we are quite sure that this time around, the people that have registered, 6.8 million people, we should get a higher percentage of people showing up to vote, unlike that we have had in the past, and we beat the 70% mark of last time.
Now, Sangwani, talk to me, talk to us about the political playing field. To what extent is the political playing field leveled?
Well, I can say it has been leveled to the meaning of the letter itself. We are experiencing a new dynamic in the political landscape. The commission opened up for campaign for all the candidates to contest. None of the candidates has come forward to complain of being brutalized, being abused. They have been free to hold their rallies. They have been free to hold whistle stop tours. We should commend the staff that have been involved in allocating venue. They have been really professional. They have not shown any sides. They have stood above political pressure to ensure that the political landscape is well leveled. Looking at the side of the Malawi Electoral Commission, our commission is very independent and apolitical. Stakeholders have attested to this. We don't have any political side. And what we have been doing, you know, what we have been planning, it has been the decisions of the commissions prevailing in anything.
I'm afraid that we seem to have lost the line in Malawi. Are you there, Sangwani?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, I see. What about the issue of fake news, especially via Facebook and WhatsApp?
Well, this is an issue that we can now term it to be a global problem. Everyone is complaining about fake news. As Malawi Electoral Commission, we have not been spared. There have been issues that have been coming about ballot papers marked ballot papers being found anywhere, somebody releasing the numbers of candidates who are allowed to contest when we had not released that, and so many issues attacking the personalities within the Malawi Electoral Commission. What we have done on our part is to ensure that we've got an effective communication strategy, strengthened communications and building of trust with our stakeholders so that when they hear of such things, they don't just believe or act on them unless they cross-check with us.
Sangwani, final question. There have been some rumors and some might say allegations that the Malawi Electoral Commission is in the business of about to rig an election by using a sort of creative accounting. Are you in a position, for example, to talk to us from the deepest, better part of the bottom of your Malawian heart and soul that the results of this election will reflect the will of the people, the will of the voters, and not the will of those officials who will be counting the vote?
Well, thank you. I'm hearing that from you, but I can still tackle that one because what I can explain to you, our polling system and our result management tabulation has not changed from the polling station. When we go for voting on Tuesday, all the votes cast will not be moved from the place where voting took place unless they have been counted. And after counting, each and every monitor of a candidate or political party will get a copy of those results, and they have to sign that they agree with those results. When the results are taken to the constituency tally center, there will be monitors for political parties and candidates. They will also have to be given those results, and whatever we have at the constituency tally center will be audited. That is, if we receive the results, the auditors have to vet, yes, this is related to what has come from the centers. And then we transmit that to the main tally center in Blantyre. Even at the main tally center, there will be auditors and there will also be monitors of the political parties. So whatever we get at the main tally center, we'll be giving out to all the stakeholders. If they see any anomaly, they'll be free to query us. And in this process, I don't think there is anywhere that somebody can claim to say we can give a room for creative arithmetic for somebody to manipulate the results. But we may not be that much surprised with these statements because we are in the elections period and everybody thinks they can throw in on the agenda whatever they're imagining could be an issue that can happen. But believe you me, those that have been close to the process, they will even testify for us that the commission has been more than transparent and has put in place measures to ensure that we have a credible election that we have never had before in Malawi, and that would be an even an envy to the own countries in Africa and maybe even beyond Africa.
Thank you very, very much, Sangwani, for your insight.
Thank you.
You're most welcome and good luck next week.
Thank you so much.
You're most welcome, sir. Let me come to you, my sister Janet. It is a pleasure, of course, to finally meet you, as you told me that you used to also equally host a show in the Malawian commercial capital of Blantyre.
Yes, I did. Thank you very much for having me.
No, you're most welcome. But it was very interesting that you said that show was modeled on which one?
On Straight Talk
Africa. On Straight Talk Africa.
Yes.
Why?
Well, it's a good model.
You liked it?
Yes, yes. I really do.
Well, I have to say that I am profoundly honored for your compliments and support. Let me ask you a question. You listen to Sangwani. He obviously sounds like a professional individual who is already obviously after his job. Do you, from what you have heard, I'm sure you have been interacting with a lot of your compatriots, do you find that Malawians have confidence in the ability, the capacity of the Malawian Electoral Commission to deliver a free, fair, transparent, verifiable, credible election next week?
Free, yes, in the sense that everybody has been able to go and register. Fair, it's really not there. And I would say that the Malawian voters are like walking on eggshells because the Electoral Commission, Malawi Electoral Commission, as much as it is, you know, acting professionally, it really is at the mercy, its existence is at the mercy of the government.
The government?
Yes, its resources come from the government. They want money. It's the government.
But he told us that the Malawian Electoral Commission is independent.
Independent, yes, but it gets its resources from the government, Malawi government.
But in fairness to the Malawi Electoral Commission, if that was the case, then how come, for example, 5 years ago, we had a President Joyce Banda who actually lost an election?
Well, there were a lot of other things going on at that time. If we really want to go back to 5 years ago, if I may recall, bring to your memory, we had the Cashgate issue.
Yes.
And so.
But wasn't that inherited from the previous president?
That was not the narrative that was at the campaign.
Mutarika?
That was not the narrative at the campaign. The campaign was, lady, you are in charge. this money is being lost. This man was shot in your watch, during your watch. Mm. So everything was loaded up on the former president's shoulders, who was then president at that time, and she lost that election.
And what about...
Because of the narrative.
What about back in 1994, the founding president of the Republic of Malawi, Dr. Hastings Kamuzu Banda, the Wamuyaya, the Nguwazi, a man, in fact, who was, for all practical purposes, really a presidential monarch. How come he also lost that election to Bakiri Muluzi?
Now, I'm glad you're going back to history, because I'm a historian. Dr. Banda, let's face it, he was old. He had been here for 31 years, and the time for him to, you know, change and hand over power to others was there.
He had also actually been very sick.
Won.
He had undergone some kind of operation in South Africa.
If he had won those elections, he would have died in office. So, to be fair, in that time, and I was there in Blantyre at that time, and he was really not in control.
Really?
Yeah, he was not in control. Many times he'd come to a rally, and he'd close the rally, and he had to be reminded that you haven't talked about this, you haven't talked about that. So he was, he was really beyond, the capability of handling a nation. And, in those days, we were saying, look, you are a grandfather, in fact, a great-great-grandfather. You should actually just be sitting at home and allowing your grandchildren, great-grandchildren, to come and chat with you, but not run the affairs of state. That was the sentiments that we were putting in 1994.
There are some African leaders, some might, in fact, refer to them as rulers, who feel that they are freedom fighters, and that when you are a freedom fighter, you never retire. You die in office.
I think that's a wrong sentiment to have, because there does come a time, with the example let's use of Mugabe, there comes a time when you're no longer capable to actually handle the affairs of state. And the sensible thing to do as a freedom fighter is to actually let go. When, in fact, we have like democracies now in our African settings. Mm. A term, 5 years, after 5 years, you have elections, and then another term. After that, that's it. But other presidents, they want to be continuing to stay on and stay on. And this really gives a picture that maybe there are only a few people in Africa that can rule, which is not true.
Unfortunately, those terms are not carved out of stone, because there are very many examples on the continent where the constitution, in a sense, has undergone the shifting of the political constitutional goalposts, because those individuals believe, and they have some supporters who actually agree with them, that they are uniquely gifted, that they are politically God's gifts to their own countries.
And that's wrong. It's not right. And it all speaks to wanting to milk that golden cow.
Interesting.
And because they have tasted how wonderful the grapes are tasting, they want to stay at the table and not hand over, the
Thank
leadership.
You very much. Let's bring in our brother Rimbani.
Thank you.
It is a pleasure to finally host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Well, thank you for having me. Like me, it feels like, it's a pleasure for me as well to be here. And yeah, I'm happy to be here.
What about the same question that I put to Janet? Mm-hmm. The question referring to the independence and the competence of the Malawi Electoral Commission come next week. Do you have confidence in their independence, their ability, their capability to carry out an election that is free, fair, transparent, verifiable, and credible?
Well, to a certain level, personally, I feel very confident that they'll be able to hold elections that are free and fair and Because again, I mean, the examples that you are mentioning, we look back at the last election, we had, like, you know, a ruling party that was, like, you know, contesting those elections and they lost. And you look at that, it shows you that, you know, it's like, you know, fair game for everyone. And, like, we have, like, that history of, like, okay, a ruling party is able to lose, like, elections. And, like, you know, when you look at those kind of things, you tend to, like, be confident to be like, okay, this might repeat itself this time around. If it happens that the opposition, you know, people have chosen that the opposition are the ones that are going to, like, you know, that have to lead, we feel like, I feel like, you know, it's going to happen. They'll give way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what about 5 years ago, the then president, Joyce Banda, did not seem to accept the defeat. Unlike, for example, in 1994, when the old man, you call him whatever you want, he considered defeat with grace.
Well, I mean, you know, like most of the time when it comes to elections, I think it's very rare, especially in our African setting. I mean, maybe I should not overgeneralize. I should say, like, in a Malawian setting, almost every election that we've had, the losers will always come and, like, you know, come up with, like, complaints of, like, oh, maybe it was not fair, or things were, like, you know, protocols messed up on this particular issue and stuff. Even, like, the elections that happened, like, the one that Joyce Banda lost, I think, of course, it's not on a presidential level, but, like, even, like, for, like, parliamentary level, there were, like, allegations coming up of, like, oh, some people, like, you know, complaining that votes were, like, a compromise. And when they tried to, like, I think someone went to the courts, they had to go and, like, do a recounting. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, coincidentally, five court, like, they make offices, so they were not able to go back and verify the tally of the votes. So that's why, like, you know, remember when you asked me, like, how confident I am, I said to an extent. Because, like, you know, we have cases where, like, you know, in eventualities like that might happen, and those, you know, bring you back to start questioning the credibility of MEC at the same time.
What about some reports suggesting that Malawi happens to be a very male chauvinistic society, that the system may in fact have decided not really to go with the then incumbent president, Joyce Banda, because she was a female?
Well, I guess, like, those sentiments can be, like, substantiated in a sense of, like, yes, like, if you look at it, like, the Malawian society is still, like, patriarchal in a sense of, like, okay, at least on a traditional level, we still believe, like, you know, the man is the one who's supposed to be, like, oh, the leader. And, like, you know, if you look at president, even, like, you know, the elections that we have right now, there's not many, there's not even a woman who is, like, you know, contesting among the presidential aspirants. If we look at, like, there was a campaign for 50-50 to try to make sure that, you know, in parliament, we get, like, 50 representation of male MPs, 50 right. representation of female MPs.
Right.
But, like, that has really failed miserably, especially, like, you know, if you look at most of the parliamentary, like, elections that most of the parties did in preparedness of, like, trying to choose, like, candidates for the MPs, most females have not really done well, and, like, they're forced now to contest on, like, as independents, which is a challenge in itself, because, like, you know, to compete as an independent, you need so much resources, and in a male-dominated society where women have, like, very few access to, like, resources, it becomes a challenge. And that, I guess, I don't know. I mean, if it comes to, like, answering that Malawians voted Joyce Banda out because she was a woman, I don't know. I mean, it could be true, but also because Cashgate, she mentioned, like, you know, colleague here mentioned about Cashgate, that played a really, really heavy blow on her presidential aspirations.
Malawi, like most African countries, of course, are very patrilineal, with the exception of probably of places like Ghana, where you have the Ashanti, which is matrilineal.
Yeah.
Well, time happens not to be our best ally, and you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, so please don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
On our voice voices. We're talking about the news and issues you're talking about.
Sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick.
And Hadiza Kiari.
And Ayan Bior.
And Orion Itangi Shaka.
It's time for Our Voices.
Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
We appreciate all of the audience feedback. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook. You can watch our show there and leave a comment. Now let's look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, across the United States are numerous African diaspora associations. Many strive to maintain national unity and preserve their culture, while some pursue developmental and advocacy goals. The role of the African diaspora in the United States on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Today we are talking about the upcoming elections in Malawi. Our guests are Janet Zinati Karim, a former diplomat with the Malawi Permanent Mission to the United Nations, and Limbani Kamanga, Program Manager, Grassroots Project. I have to say, lady and gentlemen, that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you two for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
It's an honor to be here.
You're most welcome, and the feeling is mutual. Yes. Let me, in fact, come to you immediately, Janet, if you don't mind. What about the question that I put to Limbani about the nature and the character of Malawian society? Could that have been one of the contributing reasons as to why Joyce Banda could not get a second term?
As I said before.
Actually, first term.
The first term.
Yeah, because she became president via divine intervention.
Yes, divine intervention.
technicality.
And the unfortunate demise of the former president.
Yes.
As I said before, I believe the big cloud of the cash gate issue, and the fact that there was somebody, her budget director, that was shot, and this was the beginning of, you know, Malawians using social media for the first time, so the news spread very, very fast. A budget director had been shot, you know, almost fatally. And although she instituted a commission to inquire what had happened and what was going on, I think the event overwhelmed, you know, her campaign. Add to that the narrative that the woman cannot control. If this was happening on her watch, she cannot control. So that kind of bad mouthing of a leader, you know, when it is directed at a woman, is double the shot as if it is directed at a man. And we've listened to how you know, supporters of the current president are saying, "Oh no, he's been doing a good job. He's been doing a good job." Never mind that there's been a whole, you know, baggage of stuff that has been leveled against him. If let's say APM was a woman,
you're talking about poverty.
But there's poverty.
There is corruption.
There is corruption.
There's unemployment.
No medicine in the hospitals.
Service, no adequate service in
no
delivery.
No adequate services. The roads are not being maintained. And if they are maintained, they're being maintained poorly. And, you know, the issues are very, very, they're truckload of issues. And if it was a woman, mm-hmm. definitely we could actually say, this woman is not getting anybody's vote. But because it's a man, people tend to excuse.
But is he the only man in town?
No, he's not the only man in town. But I think with Joyce Banda also, the fact that, you know, she was given those 2 years. Hmm. She wasn't given. People had to fight for her to get it because they even did not. There were teams that were having meetings to make sure that she does not get in. You know, she does not get the presidency.
The constitution happened to be on her side.
Yes, not only the constitution, but
land.
Also there were other institutions like the military.
The military
that
correct.
Came in and said, if this woman is not voted in, they didn't even finish that sentence.
But then that takes away from your point earlier, because let's face it, the guys that man the military, the last time I checked, they are men, not women.
They were actually guarding the Constitution.
Correct.
And I have to, you know, really take my hat off to the military in our country.
Correct.
They're very, very professional.
Very professional.
Very professional. And they
do. And very apolitical.
Apolitical and professional. Despite the fact that others have tried to politicize them, the military is very, very professional. And we're grateful that they were there and they stood in the gap to say no. Joyce Banda is the one who's going to be the president.
Malawi happens to be one of those few countries on the African continent that has never experienced a military coup. Now, you know, I have had the privilege and honor of having hosted the former Malawian president, Joyce Banda, on Straight Talk Africa when she was here. And we talked a bit about Kashaget. And she raised what I thought was a very interesting point. If it is true that I was indeed guilty of Kashaget, how come the president who succeeded me, did not take me to court?
It's a very good question.
Hmm?
It's a very good question. And it's the same question that we ask now. She's been in Malawi since last year. And people, when they're campaigning, some of the candidates are carelessly talking about Kashgate and linking it to Joyce Banda. And we say, look, if she was guilty, yes, I ask the same question. Why has Peter Mutharika not taking her to court? Because, you know, he can easily tell his justice department, say, take this woman to court.
In addition to that, the last time I checked, Professor Peter Mutharika is not only a qualified lawyer, but was a man who, earned a living, really, by teaching other people to become lawyers.
And not only that, he is the one who was the chairman of our constitutional conference in 1995.
Very interesting.
So he knows our constitution like the back of his hand, and he will not do anything unconstitutional.
This is a man, according to my homework, who got the equivalent of a doctor of philosophy in law, the JSD. The doctorate of jurisprudential science at Yale University back in 1964. So if you're talking about law or something of that sort, he's the man, obviously, who knows what it is and what it is not.
That's correct.
Let me ask you, Limbani, about this question. I mean, we're having an election.
Yeah.
Malawi has really held very democratic elections, despite, some of the issues that we are talking about. Malawians are an incredible people. People that are very welcoming, very pleasant, very nice people. I had the opportunity to be there in July last year for about a week, and I was incredibly, incredibly amazed about them. They reminded me of some of the neighborhoods that I grew up in southwestern Uganda. Not to mention that your language itself is almost like our language, really.
Yeah.
When you think about the election next week, do you get the sense that Malawians are going to vote according to issues, or is it going to be about personalities?
Who? That's an interesting question. I think it's going to be a mixture of both. Things are changing because we know Malawi, we're really new to this whole, voting issue. If you look at the beginning from, 1994, 1999, coming to, 2004, it seems like voting was mostly on, personal alignments and, ethnic groups. This candidate is from my ethnic group, I'll vote for that guy. But as we've been transitioning to, the most recent elections, it seems like the transition is maybe a little bit slow, but, there's a little bit of a transition to, going from, personal alignments towards, issue-based, making decisions based on, issues. And I feel like that is why, for example, in 2009, we see that Bingwa Mutharika, won with a very, very clear landslide that has never... Because apart from Bingwa in 2009, no other political party, no other president has ever won in Malawi with more than 50% of the votes. And Bingwa was the only one who did that. And, if it's more of, personality or maybe, you're voting on, ethnic group alignment, Bingwa wouldn't have gotten that 56%. Mm. So I think, right now, I feel like people go for issues mostly.
What about the fact that Malawi, most other African countries, is a beneficiary of the changing demographics? A majority of the average Malawian voter, from what I can see, is going to be a very, very young person. And from also my homework, it would seem to me that the vast majority of the Malawian young people would like to vote for change because they are not invested in the current status quo.
Yeah.
They have no jobs. They do not think they have tomorrow. And that the vast majority of those young people actually happen to support the incumbent vice president, Saulos Chilima, a man of United Transformation Movement. In fact, he calls his party movement. And there's a good reason for that, he said.
In fact, you've spoken very well because I have just written here youth unemployment.
Yes.
If the demographics, if the demographics is that the voter is a youthful character, personality, I don't mean character in a bad way, but the persona of the voter, the majority of the voters is youthful. The UTM has been talking of the creation of jobs. And the creation of jobs in a very imaginative way. I mean, you can't just, you're not going to have a magic wand and then have the jobs come in. But talking of the issues, we have to also remember that Malawi is an agricultural-based country. We have not industrialized. We did have some industrialization, in the 30-year rule of Dr. Banda. Unfortunately, through privatization during our first 10, 15 years of democracy, most of those industries were closed, sold, or the government disinvested from their hold because they were like national entities. So in the process of delinking government from the activities of commercial enterprises, we lost a lot of our industries. So I've listened to a lot of the rallies that Dr. Chilima has been talking, and he's talking of using the agriculture. We didn't have an agricultural revolution the way the West did. We just went straight into industrialization. So he's talking of going back into the grassroots and, you know, investing and saying, let us, you know, have commercial farms, but also let's have, you know, household farming, you know, individual farming. But then tie them in to some form of an industry-based entity that's in the rural areas, so that you're actually focusing on, like, putting yeast into the activities of the agricultural sector within the rural area. So, you know, the people are not relying on going into the urban centers.
So what about Lazarus Chakwera of the Independence Party, Malawi Congress Party?
Malawian Party. Lazarus Chakwera also has got some very, very good and novel ideas, you know, that have been infused in the manifesto. I shouldn't say his manifesto, but the party's manifesto. And I, you know, we do and we must respect the Malawi Congress Party. They're the ones that led us in the 31 years. And in that 31 years, I was there. I was growing up, you know, in that time. Malawi had it good.
I am told that, in fact,
we had it good. And the agriculture.
Majority of the infrastructure that you see.
The majority, the infrastructure. No, don't say the majority.
Is
the infrastructure of the Malawi Congress Party.
Dr. Hastings Kamuzu Banda.
Yes.
The Wamuyaya.
That's true.
Yeah. The Nguazi.
Yeah.
Very true.
I must say, like, you know, you mentioned the idea of, like, there's so much voter apathy in Malawi, which is true. And part of it, like, you know, part of the, like, the narrative that people give for being, like, very apathetic about, like, elections is, like, they point out to issues of, like, oh, most of the infrastructure we see, they were under Dr. Kamuzu Banda. And, like, you know, we transitioned to, like, democracy, and there were so many promises of, like, oh, now you're becoming democratic, you know, prosperity is going to come and all that. We've had series of, like, elections where we change political parties and all that, but when you compare, like, you know, the development activities, like, you know, the deliverables that have happened during, like, the multi-party era compared to the dictatorship, people now start to point to, like, oh, maybe Malawi should go back to dictatorship now. It's like, you know, because, of course, it's a little bit ridiculous, but, of course, it's their opinions and all that.
To dictatorship?
Some people say that.
Or do they look
they
at
say
those,
like, okay,
those years as good old days?
And, like, it's mostly, of course, people, like, fight back against this idea. Like, most of the people who were there would be like, okay, you know what? It was really terrible then, and, you know, for you to be making those kind of, like, suggestions, like, oh, maybe we should go back to dictatorship, is very terrible. But, like, people point out to the fact that there is mostly, like, you know, no national agenda that, you know, gets continued when you're changing political parties. Like, you know, people say, like, okay, we were able to, like, Kamuzu was able to institute all those infrastructure, like, you know, developments, because, you know, he had 30 years of doing all that. But now, because we're changing now and then political parties, most, like, projects that get started by one leader, once that leader is out of power, those projects get discontinued.
Right.
So.
But it when is. You think about it, really, from everything I have read,
yeah,
and a lot of people that I was able to talk to and with when I was in Malawi last year,
yeah,
the economy is stupid.
Yeah.
Poverty,
yeah,
is like an equal opportunity employer.
Yeah.
Why would Malawians, you think, vote for a vote of confidence in the current government, the Democratic Progressive Party?
Well, I guess, okay, I pay attention to, like, you know, voices that people, you know, present, for example, like, you know, Facebook groupings or maybe like WhatsApp groups and like Twitter, all that. And from what I've observed mostly, like, people look at, for example, you talked of like Chirima. Most of the people who are like in his movement are from like DPP, like came from DPP. Came from DPP to form his movement.
Correct.
You look at Chakwera. Now he is like in an alliance with Joyce Banda, who, I mean, unfortunately, Joyce Banda is like, you know, AKA Cashgate. So you look at, okay, people are like, okay, UTM is just frustrated people who have moved out of like DPP because they were denied maybe like, you know, opportunities in DPP. Chakwera is like, he's in with Cashgate.
Right.
So therefore, the devil you know is better than the angel that you don't.
Really?
Those are the reasons that people...
But what about the fact that, for example, Janet, the last time I checked, the Malawi National Assembly is controlled by the Malawi Congress Party, correct?
Yes, the majority of the members of parliaments come from the Malawi Congress Party.
So if they could, in fact, control the National Assembly, how come that could not possibly translate into the presidency?
Let me tell you something. Okay, I'll answer that question by way of speaking to, like, the change in the electoral law. Okay, the government has instituted a commission, the review of the Electoral Law Commission. Okay, now in that, and I was speaking to some of your colleagues before we started the show, in that was a segment that said that there will be a seat in every district, 28 districts of Malawi, reserved only to be contested by women. When that, you know, the proposed law got into the in front of the Minister of Justice, they took out that part. They took it out.
I see.
As you know, as women, of course, we protested. But what the government then did is to call to the palace various members of the different political parties, and because they control the coffers. They offered the money, and when they went in to vote, they voted against it. There were a lot of members of the Malawi Congress Party that voted against that, you know, that new law.
Very interesting. You know, you both said that as far as Madam Joyce Banda was concerned, Cashgate was her political Achilles heel.
Yes.
Possibly her political albatross. What about these allegations, for example, that incumbent president, Professor Peter Mutharika, may have received a kickback of about $4 million? Any truth in that? And if it is true, where does that leave him?
Well, those allegations were true, I would say, because I think like he came back like later on after people like protested, like, you know, after that, when this news came out and people started protesting against it, he said like, oh, he will return back the money.
He actually said he will return back the money?
I think so, if I'm not wrong.
I don't know about the $4 million, but I do know there was that other...
The Karim one.
The Karim, no relation of mine.
Not you, of course, but like Zamia Karim. Oh, no, I mean you, Zamia.
Yeah.
There was like a...
The 54 billion kwacha, and he returned it back. That's an admission of, guilt.
Yeah.
And, intelligent, you know, thinking Malawian would, you know, actually have to think twice when they are voting, and they should vote their conscience that, you know, and this is just one of the many things that have been going on wrong with the current government.
So it looks like really, yes, there are 7 candidates, the last time I checked, who are trying to be the next occupants of State House.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you've already talked about 2 of the most competitive here having problems, really. You talk about Lazarus have problems by proxy, because of being associated with someone that was accused for having been associated with Cashgate.
Yes.
Now, you talked about incumbent president.
Yeah.
President
Mutharika.
Mm. The allegations of the 4 million kickback, that could be politically an elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Doesn't that leave like
Chilima? It does to an extent, but like I said, there's still that voice of like, okay, these guys, like, you know, just frustrated. But also some people point at the fact that, you know, he fell off with the incumbent president, but he continued to, like, you know, hold to be like the vice president, where he was not even doing like any duties that are like, you know, assigned to his office. But he did not resign. Yeah. And he continued to receive, like, you know, his salary.
Malawi is a very interesting country. Very, very tolerant.
Can I speak to that, please?
Well, unfortunately, it seems to me that we have soon to go, because time happens not really to be our best ally.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, before we go, I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge the passing of Tanzanian billionaire business tycoon, author and philanthropist Reginald Abraham Mengi. He passed away last week in Dubai, where he had been receiving treatment. He was 75. He was buried last Thursday in his ancestral home in Moshi, the Kilimanjaro region. He came from the humblest of the humble beginnings to become arguably one of Africa's most successful and kindest businessmen. Mengi was perhaps best known for owning one of the largest and most influential media companies in East Africa. Each year, he donated millions of US dollars to educational, medical, and religious institutions in Tanzania. The Straight Talk Africa family extends our profound and heartfelt condolences to the Mengi family and the people of Tanzania. May his soul rest in eternal peace. On that note, our guests today were Janet Zinati Kalim and Himbani Kamanga, and Sangwani Mwafulirwa joined us earlier from Lilongwe. Thanks to our audience for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Malawi, and please remember to keep the African hopes alive.